I've got a question about guardianships and trusts. Attorneys have obtained letters of guardianship only for guardian of the person and left out guardian of the estate because there's a trust that exists or was created for the ward. If there is no checking account to handle day-to-day spending for the ward, for groceries, eating out, etc., would it be prudent for the guardian of the person to seek a guardian of the estate that is limited to a checking account to handle these day-to-day expenses that it receives from the trust? I think we heard so much about least restrictive alternatives. A guardianship of the estate seems like the last solution that you would want for this particular problem. Depending on what the terms of the trust are, a better option would be to have the trust pay directly to permitted expenses as opposed to having a checking account set up in the name of the guardian. It could be a conversion to a special needs trust, or it could be just direct payment. But most trusts have facility of payment provisions that allow these payments to be made. So I think the answer would be you might be able to have a guardianship of the estate for one checking account that's receiving assets from a trust or receiving cash from a trust, but you wouldn't really want to do that because it would just be so much more work and so much more expense to operate the guardianship of the estate. Better to work with the trustee or get a new trustee that knows how to do it so that the payments are made directly to the benefit of the ward.
My first thought on this one was that the ward almost certainly has a Social Security income, and the representative payee for Social Security should have a rep payee account, so that account can be used for the personal expenses in addition to the trust distributions that Glenn has talked about. In the real world, that's how it usually works.
Okay. Client is the duly appointed independent executor under father's will. He has no cash assets to manage the estate because all bank accounts named one daughter, and there are five children, as JDWROS.
Dan, could you speak into the speaker?
Not close enough. Okay. Should I start over?
Into the microphone.
All right. Client is the duly appointed independent executor under father's will. He has no cash assets to manage the estate because all bank accounts named one daughter as joint tenant. Executor is highly suspicious that elderly, infirm father did not intend for one child to receive all cash. What tool does the executor use to challenge this transfer? I have kind of a two-part answer. First part's easy. We have a wonderful new statute just passed in 2019 that gives the executor the right to get a copy of that, the signature card for the bank account. The statute is Texas Estates Code 111.101. You get that signature card, you make sure it meets all the requirements for a joint tenancy under Texas law. It might not. If the bank can't produce that signature card, that means there is no joint tenancy because it has to be in writing. If all they have is like a little entry in their computer, I don't think that counts. So that's the first part. The second part is, let's say you discover that the account wasn't truly a joint tenancy. What do you do now? If say the bank has already paid daughter the money. I don't think you can go against the bank because the bank probably had the right to pay the money to the daughter either way. If the daughter was on the account, even if there wasn't a joint tenancy agreement, even if she was just a co-signer or a tenant in common, the bank is probably protected in paying the money to her. So you have to go against her. And I think, y'all help me here, I think you would sue her for conversion. Is that what you would do? If she's taken money that she's not entitled to? Anybody have a thought?
No, I think you're right. I mean, the harder question would be, what if it is an effective survivorship agreement?
If it's prima facie valid, I mean, if you're suing her, you could maybe still argue perhaps that she had a fiduciary relationship with the father, either formally through a power of attorney or informally because she was taking care of him. And she may have violated her fiduciary duties if she talked him into doing this without him fully understanding. I think there's some case law suggesting that you could get this set aside on the ground of undue influence. This is not an easy lawsuit. And again, you can't make the bank a party to it. You're going against the daughter. And
Yeah, it's tough. You know, back in 1990, I'm talking about a 1990 Supreme Court case, but Stauffer versus Henderson was the case which held that the at that time new account agreement statutes that Texas had that said if you have this language in your agreement, it's a survivorship account. If not, it's not. The Supreme Court said that that is dispositive. No extrinsic evidence is allowed to determine whether the parties intended a survivorship agreement or not. If it has the right language in it, that's going to be the definitive determination. So the only way around that, if it has the right survivorship language, would be some sort of breach of fiduciary duty or fraud claim against the daughter for and the recovery, I think, would be based on this idea that if she was a fiduciary, if she had a power of attorney or she was acting in a fiduciary capacity, she hauled her dad down to the bank and was responsible for taking care of him and did everything for him and said, here, Dad, sign these account agreements. It would be based on her receiving the benefit of a gift from the father. And if you were able to prove it was a self-dealing transaction by a fiduciary, then she'd have to prove that the transaction was fair. So I don't think that's an attack on the agreement itself. I think it's an attack on the actions of the daughter as a fiduciary. But I think that's about the only way you can get around a survivorship agreement that is valid on its face. And obviously this problem...